have a story to tell us. We're going to start off our intro with a story from our producer.
What's up?
My boss was in jury duty for a week, and today he gave us the whole story.
At first I was like, are you allowed to tell us this? And he's like, yeah, I'm good. And I'm like, no, are you sure you're allowed to tell us this? And he was like, yeah, I'm totally good. So basically, this is what happened. There's dude A and dude B. I'm just going to say it like that.
Is that how he told the story?
He told the story in between two meetings, and he didn't tell it chronologically, because he'd be like, oh, I forgot to tell you this. So I'm going to try my best to reorganize. This is not going to be in-depth. I also did no research, did not look up any articles on this. Okay. I didn't think there would be any articles on this.
Yeah, anyways. So far, yeah.
So dude A apparently, allegedly took $35 from dude B. Then dude B says, yo, I need that money because I need to pay for a surgery for my wife. And so he's freaking out. And then the alleged incident, which is what happened, this trial is not even about the $35 necessarily. It's about what happens next. And what happens next is the dude B, the guy who needed the money, goes over to the other guy's house on Super Bowl Sunday. My boss says, I don't really remember how this happened. It was never really, he goes, I'm still confused as to how this happened. And I was like, you're a juror. How do you, like, if you're, like, the trial's done. Oh my God. How do you not know a detail if you made a judgment? I was so like, what do you mean you're confused about something? But anyways, he goes, I'm not sure how the guy got in. He goes, never really got explained fully. But basically, the dude B, who's like 70-something years old, goes in this guy's house, says, like, where's my money? Something happens, and he shoots the pinky finger off of the other guy.
What? So random.
Yeah. Okay. Well, trial starts. The defendant is dude B, because he's being charged.
I'm sorry. Ahead. I just have to, I feel like pinkies are, like, super important. No? Like, trying to do things without a pinky is hard.
I mean,
no, I know, but like, I feel its absence.
Yeah, you would feel your thumb's absence way more.
Oh, of course, but that's on a finger.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I could get by.
I would be sad.
Yeah. I think the most important fingers are probably the middle and the index.
I mean, they're all important in different ways.
Middle and the...
You can't be fancy when drinking tea without a pinky.
That is true. Like, you guys are not.
Or cider.
So anyways, the trial starts, and the guy, the older man who needed the money, is the defendant. And the dude who got his finger shut off is the plaintiff? Man, I don't know these things. Probably shouldn't produce a true crime podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you. And basically, in the trial, they went for like a I don't know what charge they went for. Again, my boss did not explain this very well, but basically at the end, assault
with a deadly weapon,
and also trespassing, all that kind of stuff. Thank you. So in the trial, one of the things he told me that happened that was really funny was basically the guy shot the finger, and then he like ran. He hid the gun. Gun has not to this day been found. But the guy had like the dude's blood on his finger, like on his body. Mm-hmm. Like there was a ridiculous amount of evidence stating the fact that he was there and he did do something. And then when the prosecution asked him, hey, where is the gun? Like, let me remind you, you're under oath and you need to respond truthfully. He replied, and my boss goes, and I quote, Nunya.
The guy literally
just says, Nunya.
It literally is.
And then they're like, you need to answer this truthfully.
It is our business, yeah.
And then the guy goes, I don't know. I don't know where. What? I forgot where I put that thing.
And this man's like 80 years old. Yeah. Like, how old is the other guy?
I don't know. He didn't tell me. Again, it's more of a funny story.
That's funny.
To the record. Funny. And then the guy's like, the police officers come in and they're like, yeah, when we were interrogating him, he like tore up the interrogation room.
Oh,
and then
gosh.
He was like, there's no way I did that. There's no way. I'm like 80 years old. I can't do that. And the officers are like, we have footage. And
oh.
they played the footage. And like, they watched body cam. Like, all of this happened.
No.
Well, at the end of the week is Friday. Closing arguments for both sides are done. Everything, rebuttals are done for both sides. And the judge goes, oh, we're going to dismiss the alternate jurors. And I'm guessing they don't tell you if you're an alternate juror so that you pay attention.
Yeah, probably.
And he was an alternate juror, my boss. So he was like, are you serious? And he's like, oh, dang it. Okay. And then he asked the bailiff, can I still sit in like the gallery? Because this is a completely public case. So that's why he was able to talk about it. And he goes, okay. And the guy was like, sure, yeah, you can. So he sat in the freaking gallery. And at the end, the jury, after like, my boss was like, I was like, this guy is 100% guilty because like,
yeah.
it's so obvious. And he's like, and also in the state of Florida, he explained something about like, they can do multiple charges and then they don't have to like, you can pick a different one. I don't know the exact legal thing, but he basically said there's multiple charges. Then we can go for something less if there's not enough information,
yeah.
evidence or whatever. Well, the jury, he was like an hour passed, 2 hours passed. And I'm just like, why are these people taking so long? It was so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back and they only found him guilty for battery. So for not for trespassing. I forgot to tell you, he openly admitted in court to concealed carry without a permit, owning a gun unregistered, like multiple things. And the jury was like, yeah, we'll get him on battery. And so the thing was, he then got charged with, or he got sentenced with, 1 year in jail, but he spent a year in jail waiting for trial. So the trial ended and he walked.
Yeah. They do that.
Isn't that crazy?
It's like time served.
Yeah,
which
time served.
Is absurd to me because that's not the same.
That's crazy.
But yeah, my boss is literally like, still mad. He's like, that guy should be in jail. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, and I'm frustrated that I didn't get selected to be an actual juror.
Yeah.
The case I was on, the alternates knew they were alternates.
Yeah, the way he explained it to me, he didn't know. Because he was surprised when he got sidelined.
One of them had to be, one of the main jurors, they just came in and were like, you need to come with us. And we never saw her again. And then one of the alternates was a full-time juror at that point. Like, they moved him.
Oh, wow.
So everyone knew.
He did tell me that in the jury selection process, there was a high school student that had got called.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Who was 18, but still in
yeah.
high school.
Yeah,
and so he goes, we're sitting there, and then, like, I guess the judge or whatever was like, is there anything that makes it so you cannot be here? And you know, people are like, well, literally, he goes, I have a physics test tomorrow. And they were like, oh, like for college? And they're like, no, I'm still in high school.
I
want to
graduate.
Like, yeah, I'm about to graduate.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. If I was in high school, I would have lied. I would not have said anything.
Yeah, I would have wanted
no,
to,
for
I
sure.
To
I would have just
like a free school. Like, you have.
You get out of school and
yeah.
you have a good reason. Like,
oh
you have
gosh.
An excuse.
Yeah, you probably get straight A's for doing that. But anyways, that's my story. I thought it was pretty funny.
Oh, that's crazy.
That was a cool story.
So this is part two of our special episodes by Jan and Steve. So this one is Ash's story that Jan gave her. So we're talking esports, which I'm really excited
yep.
about. I don't know like anything.
Yeah, I was excited. There was a lot of rabbit holes that I want to say I read like 30 stories
oh,
of.
Gosh.
And it was not anything substantial that
yeah.
like I could make a story out of. I could have done 30 short stories, I guess, but, and then I found one like solid story. So,
okay.
My information came from Wikipedia, a short amount, and then mostly an ESPN article written by David Fleming.
Okay.
And this is like some, my words, most copy and paste because
gotcha.
He did a great job. So, shout out to him. On August 26th, 2018, the first video game tournament of the season was held for Madden NFL 19.
Interesting.
A game that had only been out a few weeks. It was held in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh.
It was not a super large group of people. In fact, they referred to each other as a brotherhood. And their craft was more passion than pastime. So it was a very big deal. To people who play stuff like this, it's what they dedicate their time to. The tournament was held at Jacksonville Landing, which is an open air mall. I think maybe it just means like there's indoor, outdoor, but like breezeways.
But it's like a mall?
Yeah. I guess Jan can clarify at the end.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a downtown mall. They met in a game room in a restaurant called Chicago Pizza and Sports Grill, where they were playing for a $5,000 prize.
Oh, shoot.
Yep. A spot at the Madden Classic in Las Vegas, and in the fall and bragging rights. They enjoyed their time and shared drinks and banter, but one player seemed distant and irritable.
Uh-oh.
When a player tried to talk to David Katz, who is 24, about what events he was looking forward to, he countered with, "Don't worry about it," and ended the conversation abruptly.
But he was like one of the players?
Yes.
Okay.
David played as Bread and was known for how well he played and his strange as tendencies.
Bread? That's his username?
Mm-hmm. Bread.
Oh.
He has
how many people play this? Is it like a tournament?
It's a tournament, yeah.
So it's like a lot of people. Over 100. Scale down.
Well, this is a smaller tournament.
Okay.
I should have looked into the bigger ones, how many people they could reach.
Gotcha.
But this one had over 100 people, but that was considered small.
Okay.
He was in Jacksonville after driving 11 hours from Baltimore and didn't bring much with him for his journey. He just had his mirrored glasses, a backpack, and the clothes on his back.
Okay.
He wore the same outfit the second day of the tournament and throughout his time. So it was very obvious that that was all he had with him.
That's weird.
I
guess not for gamers.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're there to do one thing. Yeah. Maybe bring a different shirt.
If you're playing all the time, though, you're literally not even worried
about it. Yeah, I think the part that stuck out to people was just the fact that he didn't change clothes. Because mm-hmm. I don't think that's typical. But maybe, Jan's saying, maybe it is. I'm trying to, I do have a lot of respect for people who do this because I'm awful at it. So I want to be respectful. The tournament was not like other large events. It was very intimate and not flashy in the least. They didn't even have enough chairs for everyone. So Aww. It was very basic.
Yeah.
It was for those who truly love the game and maybe even had something to prove. Katz won twice on opening day during the pool play and lost once to Dennis, quote, evil Ken Alston. I like finding out all of their names.
Their usernames. Cool.
Evil Ken was from New Jersey and after defeating Bread, offered him his hand. Bread, also known as Katz, resented and rejected the gesture and offered a cold blank stare instead.
Okay.
So he takes it very seriously and he does not like losing.
Vibe from him.
The next day he played in the single elimination tournament under the name Satiric Bulb.
Does he keep changing his name?
Yeah, I guess you can do that. But Satiric Bulb.
I like Bread the best.
He tied up the game in the second half. So I'm going to go into a little bit of
the game.
A little bit. So he's tied it up in the second half. In a surprising onside kick recovered the ball.
Okay.
This is where some knowledge about the game rules come into play. Kat's opponent, Boogs, paused the game waiting for the play to be overturned by a tournament official, which they have at these tournaments, mm-hmm. Due to a rule where pro players had to be trailing in the second half. So he wasn't trailing. He was losing pretty badly. Mm-hmm. Trailing meaning you're close in points. Trailing in the second half to use an onside kick. However, the rule had recently been changed. Boogs wasn't bothered and just said, good stuff. So they were like, nope, the rule changed. So keep the game going. It stands.
Mm-hmm.
He did eventually. So Katz eventually lost the game. despite his strategic move. He kind of knew that this person likely wouldn't know the change of rules, and mm-hmm. so used it and kind of was like gleeful about, but he did lose and he didn't take it well. In the next 5 to 10 minutes, things would go terribly bad.
Oh no.
Now we're going to go back a little bit, just kind of on Kat's life. Mm-hmm. In the middle of the night, with his Xbox controllers locked up in his mother's room in Columbia, Maryland, an adolescent David Katz squeezed his hand into a fist, gathered his rage, and punched a hole through the bedroom door. Okay. Richard and Elizabeth Katz divorced in 2005 when David was 12, and his brother Brandon was 15. Richard and Elizabeth's legal battle, which went on for a decade, produced hundreds of pages of court records and medical documents that offer a window into David's life leading up to Jacksonville, especially the way his mental health care became an issue between his parents.
No.
Richard and Elizabeth, who were cooperating with the FBI, didn't really speak to anyone else. So they wouldn't talk to ESPN or anyone else
like after
whatever happens. Yeah. So okay. They just talked to the FBI. But everything that we're going to go into is just based on court documents. When divorce proceedings began, a therapist described David in court documents as possibly having a, quote, psychiatric crisis.
Oh, gosh.
Due to worsening depression that interfered with his eating, sleeping, and willingness to get out of bed. He began taking antidepressants as well as Risperdal, an antipsychotic drug used to treat schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. Richard challenged his son's diagnosis and in court accused Elizabeth, a toxicologist at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, of having, quote, an obsession with using mental health professionals and, in particular, psychiatric drugs to perform the work that parents should naturally do.
What the heck?
A long-winded way of saying you're throwing pills at a problem instead of doing your job. I can see both sides. I think they're both just kind of making their kids.
Well, if she's aware of like certain, she's more like knowledged in it. Like I can understand being more willing because you know about it.
It's very much like they're using the kids as pawns in their game. It's not really about the kids. That's so, he also testified that a psychiatrist recommended David stop taking the drugs, and he entered into evidence an FDA study on the increased suicidal thoughts and actions of people 18 and younger who take certain antidepressants. And a 98-item finding of fact from 2006, the court summed up the situation. There are serious issues regarding the children upon which the parties have fundamental differences of opinion, not the least of which are how to handle the child's mental health needs and educational needs. Both parents are intelligent, well-educated people. It is unfortunate that for the children that both parents are so focused on the litigation that the children's needs seem to be taking a back seat. Basically what I said. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of focused on nitpicking each other and not.
Which is sad.
Mm-hmm. In August 2007, and again in December, David, then 13, spent approximately 2 weeks in a psychiatric care facility in Townsend and Rockville, Maryland, because he was depressed and skipping school, according to an affidavit from Richard. In January 2008, he was taken involuntarily to a therapeutic wilderness school.
What the heck is that?
For teens in Utah, which I do not trust.
Is it like a camp thing? Kind of like when you're bad and they send you away to a farm?
Yeah, it sketches me out. I could have looked into which one he was sent to, but I doubt it was a great situation. Maybe
those
it was,
are never. They're like scared straight.
I mean, I'm sure there are good ones out there, but I haven't heard of them.
Just
so
go to church camp.
There's bad ones of those too.
That's true.
Court records say that when depressed or agitated, he would suffer crying jags. I don't know what that is. Collapse into the fetal position, lock himself in his mom's car, or pound his hands against his head.
Oh, bud.
He's not coping well.
That's so sad.
In a 911 transcript from 2009, Elizabeth tells the operator, quote, he's sitting here wrestling with me and the cable cord to the TV.
Oh.
Wrestling me with the cable cord to the TV. I've had enough with this child. Oh, he has been abusive for over 2 years.
He needs help.
The next year, David was failing most of his classes at Hayman High School in Columbia and staying up until 4 a.m. during the week playing video games. Elizabeth and David battled constantly over his Xbox to the point where an attorney said in the court records, "This is not Xbox court."
Oh, gosh.
His mom told a Howard County judge, "His hair would very often go unwashed for days when I took his gaming equipment controllers away. So he couldn't play at 3 or 4 in the morning. I'd get up and find that he was just walking around the house in circles, just walking in circles." In a letter dated December 22nd, 2009, written in pencil and clear handwriting on loose leaf paper, David asked the court to let him live with his father. He said, "Dear Judge, today is my birthday and I'm turning 16 years old. I live with my mom and I've been wanting to live with my dad. My mom is pretty crazy. She called the police on me about 20 times for pretty much nothing, like coming home a little late or something. She also gets drunk and starts yelling at me and poking me and doesn't leave me alone. She has hit me before and always takes my stuff because she feels like it. I hate her more than anything in the world. Sincerely, David Katz." A lawyer appointed to represent the children's interests had previously recommended that Elizabeth be granted sole custody of David. The court appeared unwilling to override that recommendation based on the new information, because less than 4 months later, David wrote another letter asking again to live with his dad. Still, David managed to graduate from Hayman High in 2011 and registered at the University of Maryland in 2014.
Oh, good for him.
Majoring in environmental science and technology.
Interesting.
He did not graduate and was no longer enrolled by 2018. So he just kind of fizzled out. At some point as a young man, David moved to his father's home in Baltimore's Inner Harbor, where he was living at the time he drove down to Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Richard was a NASA engineer, and he once told the court that he thought David was, quote, physically strong and mentally does not need drugs, end quote.
Hmm. His dad's making money.
Yeah. Father and son, he said, shared a love of baseball and would play catch, spend time at a nearby batting cage, and attend Bowie Bay Sox games together. I don't know what that is. Through all of his struggles, Katz continued to play video games, and by 2017, he put together a run of successful Madden tournaments. In February 2017, he was responsible for what EA Sports described at the time as, quote, the most exciting moment in all of the 2017 NFL Club Series Championships, end quote. Oh, shoot. Playing in the finals of the Buffalo Division, with time running out and the score tied at 20, the seventh-seeded Cats threw a Hail Mary to upset the top-seeded player, Carlos Los Yancy. He won $3,500 in a trip to Los Angeles for the Madden Club Series Championship.
Dang.
In a congratulatory tweet sent out by the Bills, Cats appeared gaunt and expressionless. A month later at the championship, a Madden announcer said on air that getting Cats to open up and talk about anything at all was like pulling teeth.
That guy's gone through some stuff.
Yeah. The game he excelled at happened to have one of the most social communities in esports.
That's ironic.
Yeah. All the important tournaments are in person, big, loud, crowded spectacles with face-to-face matches. The sanctuary and respect Madden offers its top players is built on its strong sense of community. And many say that to truly be accepted, a player has to socialize. So it's not like being in your own home where you can kind of just slip in and out. Like,
yeah, it's like a group. It's a community.
It's kind of the purpose of it.
So was he kind of like ostracized because he didn't socialize?
You'll see. We rag on each other and we argue all the time, but at the end of the day, I love those guys, says Madden competitor Tony Vitek Montanino, I think is how you say his last name. Sorry. He's 34. And then he said, when I go to tournaments, I'm very outgoing. It's always, how's your family? How are your kids? Let's go to the bar after and have a drink. By the time the 2018 season opened in Jacksonville, Katz had added to his savant-like grasp of Madden minutiae, allowing a strategic advantage on moves like second-half onside kicks, like we talked about. but his fellow competitors describe his behavior inside Chicago Pizza as detached. Richard Katz and the FBI have not said what, if any, medication David was taking that weekend. So we don't really know what state of mind he was fully in.
Yeah.
We just know he seemed off. Jordan Kandua, which is the name he went by Kandua as his gamer tag. One of the players Katz beat on the first day said Katz had seemed a little on edge and didn't say anything but a few words. Whatever Katz was thinking or feeling, it was locked away.
Uh-oh.
So after losing, Katz walked out of the pizza place,
mm-hmm.
doing whatever he did, and then came back in. So minutes after losing, he came back in through a single worn metal frame glass door with a 10-foot Mario Brother portrait on one side and a poster on the other that said, "There are shortcuts to happiness, and dancing is one of them." It was just before 1:30 p.m. He carried a .45 caliber and a 9mm two 9mm handguns. The police say he purchased legally in Maryland less than a month earlier. Maryland prohibits people with a history of mental illness from purchasing or possessing firearms, but Katz would have had to self-report his issues.
Wait.
He would have had to go in there and tell them that he had this background. Yeah,
why would somebody do that if they wanted to get something?
This is why gun reform is necessary.
Yeah, like, why somebody's just going to walk in there and be like, I have all this. Because the people
purchasing guns are not going to self-report.
No.
So that
you wouldn't walk in there if you wanted, like...
That alone is important, educating yourself on these things is why... Part of the reason why I chose this story is, like, people don't know that. They think, oh... If you have a mental illness, you can't purchase guns. They don't know the process necessarily. And so, yep. So he had extra ammunition and an aftermarket laser sight.
What?
Which just helps you aim.
Oh, got it.
So around 150 people were in the building. Many of them packed into the GLHF, which stands for Good Luck, Have Fun. Game bar near the restrooms in the back corner of the pizza joint. Police say Katz walked past the hostess stand and through the restaurant into the game room, where it was so crowded spectators had to turn sideways to move through. So think of like, I've been to concerts like this where it's just people packed in and you can't really like move openly. And there was little to no security.
Oh no.
So Katz pointed the red laser sight of his 9mm at the chest of Elijah, and his gamer tag was True Boy Clayton. He was playing the coveted feature game in the coveted feature game console next to the live stream. So they're live streaming this event, which is another big thing.
Oh my gosh. Can I add
something? Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the main event games, like, the most high-profile players are being featured on the live stream.
So it's like they're highlighting you. So it's a huge, like...
Oh, my gosh.
On the live stream.
Yeah. Clayton, popular and brash, was one of the most talented players. He was wearing a burgundy Adidas hoodie sweatshirt and white headphones. And a smiling Clayton glanced to his left before refocusing on the game and the Falcons kickoff, because he was playing as the Falcons. He didn't notice the red laser sight dart erratically across his chest, then disappear. So if you're watching this, you see it kind of on him and then leave. A split second later, it reappeared. This time it was steady, solid, and hovering over his heart. Anyone watching the live stream of the tournament could see it. He then opened fire, hitting Clayton at least twice, and Clayton would die from his injuries. The room became a pit of terror, panic, and smoke as he shot more fires. The live stream's video cut out. Two huge window panes on the back wall cracked into 1,000 pieces, and the live stream audio remained.
Oh.
Yeah. So you could hear everything. So it sounded kind of like balloons popping, basically, and then just glass shattering, screaming, chaos. Tony, who we talked about earlier, that I wasn't able to say his last name properly, he thought at first that it was fireworks, and he was seated with his back to Katz and felt something white hot pierce his lower back. Mm. The force of the bullet spun him around to face the shooter. He recognized Katz's shirt, the one he was wearing all weekend. So he remembered this guy from, like, why are you wearing the same shirt every day? Katz's face, however, was largely blocked by bursts of smoke from the barrel. So he literally just saw his shirt, and that's how he knew. He continued to, Katz mumbled to himself while firing into the crowd. And then Tony said, oh, what'd he shoot me with? Tony yelled before diving to his left for cover along with several other players. So the announcer's table was turned sideways and they were barricading with that. He collected himself and realized if he comes over here to clear the room, I'm screwed. None of his choices felt right, but he willed himself to his feet and lunged for the back door to exit toward the sunlit and St. John's River beyond. Careful not to slip because the floor was obviously like very like slippery at this point. The exit was crowded because everyone was trying to leave. Four people were like kind of getting aggressive. People were getting trampled. Like it got like really bad. Timothy O'Leary was his tag. Who was 25, had been standing near Tony's right shoulder. So Tony got like knocked down. When Katz opened fire, one bullet struck him in the chest. The other entered near his wrist and tore through his hand. Trying to get outside was his only chance, he says. He was hit again in his left hip.
Ooh.
He fought his way through the door and stumbled toward the shelter of another restaurant. Tony tried to follow Timothy out, but people seemed to be stepping over or around something just outside the exit. And once he reached that point, he looked down and froze in his tracks. Taylor Robertson was flat on his back and had been shot. His knees buckled, and he said, not Taylor. The 27-year-old dad was from West Virginia, and he was known as Spot Me, Please. And he apparently was a very soft-spoken, humble guy. And he was just, that was kind of a moment of, this is a person I know that I'm seeing. So in the chaos, he thought Katz made his way outside too. So he decided to go back inside. He made his way toward the bathroom and the door seemed jammed. So he tried to kind of open it. And when he opened it, there was multiple people inside and they just kind of like shook their head like, hey, it's too full in here, and shut the door on him.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What the heck?
Yeah. And he said at that moment he gave up. He laid on the ground and thought, I'm either going to die here or someone's going to help me. While this was all happening, there were several first responders conducting a training exercise across the street. So they arrived at 1:36 p.m. So it was not that long that it took them to get over there. And that was much destruction he was able to do.
Stuff happens so quick.
They didn't have any protective gear, but that didn't stop them. They rushed into the restaurant. Katz had already backed into an archway leading to the restaurant. Two were dead. 11 were wounded.
Wow.
And this is when he put the gun to his mouth and pulled the trigger. They didn't know this yet though. So they scrambled in looking for him, screaming over the chaos. Where is he? Where is he? Where'd he go? Yeah. All of this you can hear.
That's terrifying.
So that's basically how the story ends. The two died, 11 injured, recovering.
That's so sad.
The first lawsuit against EA Sports and Chicago Pizza for negligence had already been filed by a survivor who was shot twice. The sheriff told the media that as bad as the shooting was, it could have been much worse. The Jacksonville fire marshal posted an orange cease and desist notice on the front door of the restaurant, declaring that the game room had never been properly permitted, in part due to the obstructed exit. So it wasn't, they didn't have everything in place to house that.
In case of an emergency.
Yeah. These small Madden locals had been one of the last places in sports, virtual or otherwise, where talented anonymous players could still go straight from their den to the big time in one weekend. Already, the charm of these events felt like ancient history. Timothy was a, as we talked about him earlier, mm-hmm. he was a salaried member of the Milwaukee Bucks gaming team and was still at University Hospital in Jacksonville. He was scheduled for 2 surgeries to repair his hand, and 2 dangerous to extract the bullet in his chest remains. From his hospital bed, he tweeted about the hero who saved his life. The Hooters cook who got to him safely triaged his hand and bear hugged him. To keep pressure on the wounds.
That's until amazing.
His own shirt was so soaked with Timothy's blood. At the point when the police took it, like they took his shirt as evidence, basically. But that's amazing. Yeah. I couldn't find his name, but
I want to know who the people are that like closed the door on him.
I know it's one of those things. It's very jarring, but you can't know how you're going to act in those situations. And I think even Tony, which is the one who went to the, he would understand. I probably would have done the same thing. Like anytime you open that door, you're risking everyone in there. Scary. It's just, it's awful, but people are just trying to survive.
Yeah.
In the aftermath of the rampage, one detail in particular still puzzles many of the survivors. At first, the idea that Katz was mumbling incoherently during the shooting was somehow reassuring. It suggested to them that he was unhinged, mm-hmm. a crazy lunatic. But the reality of what may have been behind that cold, distant stare felt far more chilling. 2 uninjured witnesses were within feet of Katz during the shooting and said that he wasn't babbling at all. They said he was counting to himself, almost under his breath, methodically keeping track of how many shots he fired. The prevailing theory is that Katz wanted to be certain he saved one final bullet for himself.
Makes sense.
And that's the end of that story, which obviously is awful, but it was a big story. I also feel like people will shy away from shooting stories a lot.
Yeah.
And I understand why completely, especially when it comes to like minors and school shootings. But I also feel like because it's not talked about,
yeah,
people don't remember how like often it happens. And they, like I said, they don't know why there's certain reforms that need to be made, mm-hmm. and certain laws that need to be made. So yeah, I kind of just went for it. But there is one other story, that wasn't long enough for me to do.
Okay.
But it's super sad. Jana, I'm curious to know if you've heard of it, but it's about a Brazilian, Call of Duty player.
Oh,
interesting. Okay. So she was a Call of Duty player. Hold on. Okay, pronounce her name because I don't want to say it wrong. At the bottom.
So her last name's Oliveira, but you said her first name is Ingrid?
Yeah. So, sorry, we took a quick break and that's when I said that because they're going to be like, no, she didn't.
True, duh.
She was a Call of Duty player. She was very good.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up beating a player by the handle. So she was known as Sol.
Okay,
and which means sun. Yeah, she beat someone with a tag flashlight.
Okay.
And he didn't like being beat by a girl. So he went to her home and stabbed her to death.
What the heck?
He also shared a video of his attack on WhatsApp. And they had to like release a statement saying, do not pass this on to anyone else. Like, we've removed it. But if you have it on your phone. Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The case appears to fall under the specific crime of femicide, which is a type of murder under Brazil's penal code that is defined as premeditated attack on a woman based on her gender and is classified as a subcategory of murder in Brazil.
Interesting.
And it's also on the rise and everywhere. It's on the rise.
So. Oh my gosh. That's actually very interesting that Brazil has that detailed because usually they don't give a crap about anything.
I think it's like a big... So overall murder... This is going to sound, it's not going to sound like that big of a deal, but if you think about it, it is. Overall murder is down 10% in Brazil. Femicide classified murder is up 4%.
Interesting.
Like specific to that. So it's definitely in a lot of places is like rising. It's like a thing.
That's
sad. So yeah, there wasn't a lot of information out there, but I thought that was like a horrible thing that happened.
If you play any kind of online games like that, be careful.
Yeah,
because
even,
how did he even know where she lived?
It sounds stupid, but yeah, right.
It's like just be careful what you put out there.
And I mean, maybe, I don't know. Because I feel like it's something too where I don't know what measures he took to...
Oh, if he was online, like he could have tracked her or something.
Or he could have just been nice to her and then she thought that he didn't have an issue and then he tricked her. That's but so sad. I don't know. I think video games can sometimes feel very like male oriented and like they can kind of get their egos. Like even my story being like a brotherhood is like, okay, but it's a video game. Like, I don't know. Like
anybody can play that.
Yeah. And if somebody's really good, like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, those are my stories. The world of Jan, you sent me on a whirlwind adventure.
I read
a lot about like the corruption of it, which was great. But then I was like, there's so much on this. Like, I feel like it's too much almost. So I had to go in a more like linear direction.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
What do you got for us? Assuming you got, you know this well.
Okay. Yeah.
So what do you have?
Yeah. So, I am a huge fan of esports. There's a couple teams out there that there's one specific one that I really love. Mm-hmm. Esports is a really cool topic. I appreciate you being cool about that one. I do feel like it's where this world is going. I feel like you have an insane number of like viewership numbers are kind of insane right now. And it's just going to grow. And I'm really excited. I think it's a really cool area. But obviously we talk crime, so we talk to the sad side of it. But real quick at the top, just some small little things. Open air malls are like malls where all the stores are outward facing.
Like a plaza,
strip malls.
Got it.
So those are open air malls as opposed to like the ones near us that are all closed out, you know, like the more traditional malls. Also, you said he had an aftermarket laser on his gun. Aftermarket is a general term for not just weaponry, just anything. It means not made by the manufacturer.
Oh, it's so, just added on.
So, like, not necessarily added on. Like, for example, you have the iPhone chargers from Apple, like the little bricks, but then you have, like, the colorful ones that people buy.
Yeah.
Those are called aftermarket. Yeah, it just means it's not from the main manufacturer, so that's why. I don't know why they made it a point to say that it was an aftermarket laser, but so interesting stuff about he was playing in a tournament. I don't know if you said he was playing in a local tournament, and the way esports works is that there's a lot of local tournaments, like a lot of universities run them, like GameStop will run tournaments, but then you have like the official tournaments that are run by the game developers. So for example, Madden is EA, so it's either run like EA, or it can be run by a governing body that runs those. Like, it varies, and it has in recent years transitioned to being run by the developers of the games, but before it used to be run by something called MLG, and MLG was Major League Gaming, and they ran everything, like the major ones. But anyways, currently by EA, there's what's known as the Madden Championship Series. It's like a year-long tournament series, and the prize pool for the whole thing is $1.4 million, which basically means it's split up amongst the different tournaments.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the finals, the way it works is you basically play a bunch of tournaments, and then they rank you, like, it's open, so anyone can play in this, from first to however millionth player. But the top 32 players, which corresponds with the 32 NFL teams, make it to the final Madden Bowl, which is like a weekend tournament, which is not what we were talking about today.
Right, yeah.
But in that one, the winner, so the guy who wins the grand championship, he or she wins $65,000.
That's still a lot of money.
Which is technically, when I read that, I was like, oh, that's not that much. Because in like esports, we've gotten to the place where, so...
The Fortnite championship was like a 15-year-old, and he won like a crap ton of money.
He won like $2 to $3 million,
and he's like 15
by himself.
That is so crazy.
That's the largest individual tournament ever. Mm-hmm. The largest tournament right now. There's a game called Dota 2. I won't get into the specifics, but it's the game is played in teams. You have five players per team, And the prize pool for the international, which means like it's all like region based. Think like a World Cup. There's like soccer World Cup. There's regions, and everyone plays, and the top teams from each region go to the international tournament, and whoever wins the international tournament, the prize pool, so just the top teams, was $41 million.
What the heck?
And so the winning team.
Where's this money coming from?
Battle pass.
That's crazy.
Skins. Like, it's insane. Holy That's where Fortnite cow. Got the money. All the skins and the 12-year-olds that buy for that for so Christmas. Crazy. They got $90 worth of skins. It's crazy. The winner got $18 million. Now, here's what's crazy. That was last year. This year's is 2020. In 2021, it's $41 million. In 2011, so 10 years ago, the prize pool was $1.6 million. So in 10 years, it went from $1 million to $41
million. Yeah.
So like esports, that it's makes insane.
Sense, I feel like the last decade of gaming has been like
It's really crazy. It's so crazy. And so you have people who like... for another game, it's called League of Legends, which is the same type of game as Dota. One player, he was switching teams, and the team that was getting him paid the other team a transfer fee, which has never hasn't really been done that much in esports.
Yeah.
That's very popular in soccer. That's when you see like, oh, Messi went for $150 million. Well, this guy transferred for like $6 to $7 million. And I'm like, that's crazy. Like, we're getting to this place where it's like people are becoming hundreds of millionaires playing video games. So anyways, I love esports. I think it's fascinating. There was one last thing. Oh, real quick. I wanted to also add in the gaming world, you talked about how this guy went and like got really mad and killed this girl. Super sad.
Yeah.
One of the most popular things for that happens to streamers a lot is called swatting. And where a streamer is playing and he'll kill someone, and that person will realize that, oh, I was killed by this streamer. And they get so mad that they will try to look through the interwebs and try to figure out their address, and they'll call SWAT on them.
What
and it happens
heck?
All the time, to the point now where, like, people, like, the SWAT knows that this happens, and so they'll show up to the house, they'll, like, burst into the home, and, like,
what?
I've seen multiple live streams of this happening, and they'll, like,
that
they'll burst into the home,
annoying.
and then the guy's like, no, I'm a streamer, and now they're like, oh, frick, it's another streamer that we got swatted.
Like,
so, yeah.
At this point, you're not, like, joking on the guy. Like, you're wasting their time. Like, oh, that's so frustrating.
I also feel like there's got to be a way to track who does that, and then they should have a fine if
like,
they're just sending
them.
You out there for no reason.
Oh, for sure.
That's
because
so messed up.
You can figure out. They have started tracking who does it, and they get back.
That's
so, but,
horrible.
I have a friend she's big on Twitch. And she's actually created some video games and characters.
Oh, that's cool.
She's really cool. But she had a couple stalkers who would harass her in the comments. And Twitch doesn't really have a lot to protect people against harassment.
No, Twitch is stupid.
Yeah. So that's something she's like trying to like... I mean, it's her livelihood, but she's also trying to figure out a way
to... That happens a lot to women.
So what was happening was she was slowly like losing pairs of shoes. And she didn't know where they were going.
Oh,
and it was
so
just
creepy.
One of those things where you feel like, I don't know where this pair of shoes went, like, whatever. So it went up to, like, 5 pairs of shoes. And then one day she heard a knock on the door, and she opened it, and all of her shoes were lined up outside of her door.
Heck no.
So the person had come in, just took her shoes slowly, moment by moment, and then left them on the front door.
That's so terrifying.
And she, like, there's literally, like, police, no, everyone's like, there's not really anything we can do. And you know me, I was like, get a Ring doorbell, get cameras everywhere, like document everything that happens, like pay attention to where your belongings are.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's a crazy world out there, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, be careful if you're doing whatever. Well, that was the finishing of our sports themed. But you can email us if you have a story you want to tell us, and we will read it on the next episode at shotofcrime@gmail.com.
Also, we are going to change the format
a
little bit. We're going to go to one person telling a story or multiple stories and the other person kind of listening in.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of have liked this format a little bit. So we're going to try that and see what happens.
We'll see how it goes.
Yep.
So we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.